Yeah, if you could play the piano. Hey, Bruce Hornsby and the Range there. And the way it is on Talk Radio Europe, coming up for 16 minutes or thereabouts after 8 o'clock. Welcome back to the programme. Let us introduce then our next guest. He's Andrew Johnson. Andrew grew up in Yorkshire in England and graduated from Lancaster University with a degree in computer science and physics. He's mainly worked in software engineering and software development even for most of the last 20 years or thereabouts. He's worked full-time and part-time in lecturing and tutoring. He now works for the Open University. Andrew became interested in alternative knowledge back in 2003, soon after discovering Dr. Stephen Greer's Disclosure Project. Now, he has given many presentations and written and posted a number of articles on various websites about September the 11th, about Mars, chemtrails and anti-gravity research. And Andrew can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it is his own website, and that is checktheevidence.com. He joins me from his home, I think, in Derbyshire. Andrew, good evening and welcome to the programme.
Good evening. Thanks very much for contacting me and inviting me onto the programme.
No, it's lovely to have you, Andrew. I've contacted you because I've been sent many emails from people asking me to look into the chemtrails phenomenon. Now, I've spoken to you briefly off air, and I've told you that the programme sometimes looks at things like September 11th and the Kennedy assassination and things like that. What are chemtrails, Andrew?
Well, these are basically, it's a term that's been given to these trails that you see in the sky. Now, a lot of people, you know, when you start talking about this, will just sort of wave their hands and roll their eyes and say, well, these are just, you know, these are just ordinary jet contrails. And, you know, that means a condensation trail. So, you know, the basic thing is that, you know, when you breathe out on a cold winter's day, you'll see your breath. And that's the condensation, you know, from the water vapor in the air that comes out of your lungs. And then, of course, when you burn, you know, carbon-based fuel, such as kerosene or petrol in your car, you know, you'll get this sort of steamy effect out of the exhaust or out the back of the engine.
Yeah.
And you know, with a plane, it's high up in the sky, so it's very high up, you know, over about 27,000 feet, you'll get these so-called condensation trails, which are actually, it's actually not water droplets, it's actually ice crystals that form, because, of course, it's much colder up there, about sort of minus 40 degrees centigrade, I believe, is the temperature when you get up to that sort of height. So, you know, a lot of people would just say simply the aircraft trail and never really give it another thought. But you know, a number of other people, including people I've spoken to, are pretty concerned that there's some type of covert program of releasing chemicals into the atmosphere, producing these things which superficially look like ordinary contrails, but actually they're not. And they're particularly characterized by the amount of time that they seem to hang around in the sky. You know, and you can see these things lasting for anything up to an hour and a half, rather than just, you know, like, as you know, when the exhaust comes out of your car, it won't hang around in the air. It will fade away after a few seconds, and same with your breath. And on some days, indeed, if you go and watch an aircraft trail, you'll see it fades off within, you know, 10 to 15 seconds, and there's nothing visible after that period. And then on other days, you'll see these huge long trails, you know, going horizon to horizon, and then even spreading out and creating artificial cloud. And this is what I think what a lot of people are becoming concerned about, is the amount of artificial cloud that, you know, we're starting to see on some of these days.
Andrew, I've heard it said that this may be kind of intergovernmental attempt to get in the way of or try and halt the effects of global warming. Have you heard that theory?
I have heard that, and it's actually quite interesting when you start to look into that into a bit more detail. Now, I'll say at the outset, there is no proof that this is what these trails are for. And as I've said, many meteorologists will just say there's nothing going on. But if you start to observe the, I'll come back to the, you know, this climate change thing in a moment. But if you start to observe these trails, you'll see grids. You'll even see on some instances circles. You know, I've got photographs that people have sent me in a video of a plane going in a circle and leaving a long trail. And really, in many occasions, leaving patterns which are not consistent with what you'd expect from civilian air traffic.
Yeah.
This is the problem with it. I can't tell you hand on heart what chemtrails are, but I can tell you that there is something going on in the sky which is not consistent with ordinary air traffic movement. Now, going back to the climate change thing, which we get bombarded with on a daily basis, I've noticed a very distinct change in the language over the last, let's say, 18 months. And for instance, I attended an event in London, which was open to the public. You know, I've got no special kind of access or anything. Yeah, a public event, and it was run by the Royal Society, you know, Isaac Newton and all that, and all those people that are involved with the Royal Society, a very prestigious organisation of science in the UK. And the event was called, you know, you can go and look on their website for this event, it was called Geoengineering, Taking Control of Our Planet's Climate. And this sort of language has now started to enter, you know, the vocabulary of people that are, you know, sort of studying the weather. And it's and this, in, to my understanding, has only started to come into the language in about the last 2 years. And nobody's ever heard before of this word geoengineering. What does it mean? Well, it actually means what I just said, using techniques to actually modify our planet's climate, supposedly on the basis that carbon dioxide, you know, is excess and it's affecting the climate and warming things up, which is really, when you study this, there's a lot of counter evidence for this, which is not discussed.
No, it isn't. And if I can just jump in there, Andrew, I interviewed around about this time a couple of weeks back, Dr. Nick Begich in Alaska, who you've come across, of course.
Yeah.
And he's very concerned about the HAARP facility. And I'm pleased to hear your language, Andrew, as well, because you said you're not quite sure and you're not making any definite statements, but you do feel it deserves investigation. And the reason why I'm pointing out that you said that is because I do get hammered from time to time by people who don't actually listen to people like you and make up their mind straight away that you're coming across as propagating theories that governments are doing this and government are doing that, when in fact you're just saying that there's an anomaly there that wants investigation. And that's what Begich has said about HAARP. He doesn't understand what it is. Of course, there's no disclosure regarding HAARP. Nobody seems to know what's going on there. And only every 2 years do they open it up to a very select few invited guests to go in there and have a look at it. And these are worrying things, I think.
I agree. And also, you know, there are similar facilities in Europe. There's one called IceCat, which, if I've got my geography correct, is in Norway. And these devices are called ionospheric heaters. And they certainly, the HAARP project is run in conjunction with the Department of Defense, so it's not exclusively a civilian project. I think it's certainly meant to be civilian uses. And you know, people automatically, I've spoken to a lot of people, say, oh, you know, all these changes in the weather are being caused by HAARP and chemtrails. Now, I don't know whether that's true. I am concerned that what HAARP is doing is not beneficial. And even if you go look at the website, it will tell you on there what they're doing and aspects of it. They're putting 2.5 megawatts of power into the atmosphere, which is a substantial amount of power. And some say that the actual, you know, the undisclosed amount is a lot higher, up to a billion watts, which is a huge amount of power, which must be having some effect somewhere, even if it's only very localized over Alaska. So I'm certainly not happy about that. Also, what I've come across in relation to the study of chemtrails is other weather anomalies, which are very interesting to study and of great concern. For instance, radar rings, you know, and we have these bird deaths, which have been very mysterious.
Yeah, the bird deaths,
yeah. And we've had some unusual sort of earthquake events. For example, the Bam earthquake was on Boxing Day 2003 in Iran. And then we had the huge tsunami, which was Boxing Day in 2004. And those events were within 1 hour of each other, you know, a year later, which is very peculiar. And then the other one which I talk a lot about, and I believe Nick Begich won't talk about this, is the presence of Hurricane Erin, which actually was very close to New York on 9/11. In fact, it was close to New York at 8 o'clock in the morning. Now, of course, when I come up with a statement like that, people will say to me, well, what the heck has that got to do with the events of 9/11? And, you know, you get into a whole other scenario there of having to re-examine the events of 9/11. And that research has essentially been done by my friend Dr. Judy Wood, who you can go onto her website and read all about that. But this is something, there is a clear weather anomaly there on 9/11. This hurricane traveled in a straight line for 4 days. It hit Bermuda on the 7th, did a bit of damage at Bermuda, and then it went in a straight line towards New York. And on the 12th, it made a right-hand turn and moved out towards Newfoundland. Now, you know, you can put whatever interpretation on that you like, but for myself, you know, it doesn't matter what anybody else thinks, I cannot accept that as being a coincidence that this thing went in a straight line, it ended up closest to New York at 8 o'clock in the morning, next it makes a right-hand turn and goes off out to Newfoundland. I personally can't dismiss that as a coincidence, partly because of the other research that I've done in relation to that. So that's, you know, that's one, to me, clear weather anomaly which can be investigated by anybody, even if they can't sort of come to a conclusion as to what the meaning of it is. So, you know, these types of things are what I've found myself investigating with the help of people like Dr. Judy Wood. And I've posted articles about this. And, you know, there is definitely something strange going on here.
Andrew, do you think, just to take it back, it'll be nice to talk a little bit about September 11th in a few minutes with you. Do you think that with the chemtrails thing and HAARP, that what we might very well have here is our scientists and governments who actually have the best of intentions, but are really dabbling in very, very, very dangerous areas?
That's a good question, and some people have sort of, you know, made this, you know, comment or put forward this idea that the governments know that something is seriously wrong with the climate, and therefore, you know, clandestinely they're trying to fix it. I really don't go along with that idea, because in most cases, if they're doing something which is, you know, meant to be beneficial, they will try and spin it, to say that they're doing us a favour. Whereas that's certainly not the case with geoengineering. They've kind of trying to bring this in through the back door. And certainly, let me tell you another thing, what I've noticed, and anyone can go and check this, and I was reminded of this last summer quite clearly, and it's what's called subliminal messages. And this in particular happened with a comment that somebody sent to me. Now, I get pictures of chemtrails sent to me probably at least once a week, sometimes more often if they come up in some, you know, popular internet posting. I tend to get more emails then. But I had somebody contact me about, they said, oh, I've seen a chemtrail in the Railway Children film. I don't know if you remember, there was a film made in 1970.
I do, with Jenny Agutter, I remember. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a wonderful film. You know, it's a wonderful, wonderful story. And we've had it on a radio play with my children lots and lots of time. We love the story. And they said that they'd seen a chemtrail in the 1970 film of the Railway Children. And I thought, hang on a minute, I've never seen that. So I went and checked. And what I actually found was that Virgin Trains, they had made a commercial in 2006, I think it was, or possibly 2005, and it was to kind of bring in this new Pendolino train and attract attention to it, because it was meant to be this wonderful new train service that they were running. And they tried to, you know, bring in the nostalgia of the railways from the golden days of steam rail, and they got this clip from the Railway Children, which they'd used in this advert, along with clips of Cary Grant and some other scenes from films, and they'd done a wonderful digital composite job. And in this shot of the Railway Children, in the top left-hand corner of the picture, they've put an aircraft trail. I would call it a chemtrail, you know, other people will call it a contrail, fine, whatever. But they've actually put this in the picture. And a friend of mine actually wrote to the advertising company, found out who made the advert, and said, why did you put this trail in the picture? And they claimed that it was to make it more modern, bring it up to date, bring it, into a contemporary setting. But why would you put an aircraft trail, which essentially is a form of pollution, in something which is trying to romanticise train travel?
Yeah.
So I posted an article about this, and you can see the picture, you can see the video clip, you can see the original clip from the original Railway Children from 1970, where there is no aircraft trail. I have to ask myself why that advertising company chose to put that aircraft trail in the top left-hand corner of the picture. And that's not the only instance. We've come across a number of instances, I just mean people that have contacted me through the website, sent me pictures, sent me links. We had one with the London Marathon poster, which I think was, September 2009, I think it was, or maybe it was April 2010. But that, I've also got that on my website, and they were putting these aircraft trails in the London Marathon poster. This is very strange.
It is. It's almost like as if somebody is trying to blow the whistle, maybe.
Well, I don't know. That's one possibility. I tend to think when it's done in adverts and popular culture,
Trying to make it normal.
To normalize it so that you don't notice it. And there's an O2 commercial, you know, one of the cell phone operators, they did a commercial, I think, in 2006, which has got some very strange imagery in it with people in hoods looking into mobile phones, and it's very, very strange, and other people have picked up the subliminal messaging.
Andrew, if it is going on at various government levels, and we do know, by the way, I can confirm you're right, in case listeners are wondering, about the other HAARP-type projects going on around the globe. There are a number of them. Where are the whistleblowers? Because surely, even if the governments do have very good intentions, there's bound to be one or two people working on those projects who might be a little bit dubious and might be inclined to spill the beans. Why are we not seeing people coming out talking about it?
Well, that's a very good question. And, you know, I've been asked that question on a number of occasions. And the simple answer I have is I don't really know. I would expect that there would be some whistleblowers, but they seem to be thin on the ground. But one thing I can relate was another peculiar incident, which happened, well, incident's maybe not the right word, but in, I think it was about July last year, again, I was contacted by somebody, and they sent me this video, a YouTube posting, and it was claimed to be a military pilot disclosing film from a cockpit of a plane, you know, laying down chemtrails. And the username of this YouTube user was USAF FEKC10, which I think was USAF is US Air Force, FE is front end, and a KC-10 is a type of jumbo jet that the Air Force had adapted, a type of military tanker. And he claimed that he was showing this film of this plane leaving a chemtrail. You can actually see this trail, you know, from the video, stopping and starting as if it's been switched on and off, you know, on the pilot's controls or whatever. And you hear the voiceover say, "Oh, are you doing a video now? You shouldn't be doing a video. This is you know, you shouldn't be videoing this." And so we had this you know, race around the internet. And I sent a YouTube message to this chap and I said, "Well, can you give us a bit more information? You know, what route were you flying on? And can you tell us anything about this trip that you were on or anything?" And he never replied. And then a few days later, he made a posting saying, "Oh, I was just playing a trick on you guys. This is just ordinary, you know, air traffic, and I'm just posting it as a joke." And then he deleted his YouTube video, and I think he closed his YouTube account a few days after that. So I had to ask myself, this film was clearly taken from the cockpit of an aircraft, and I think it was filming. It was close behind another aircraft, so it can't have been a civilian. It was too close. This chap was too close to another aircraft, I think, for it to be a civilian aircraft. So what is this guy doing, risking his, you know, filming from a military aircraft? I'm sure they wouldn't be allowed to do that when they're on duty in the way that he does. Why is he risking that, you know, that idea? Why is he risking that to play a joke on these people who believe that chemtrails are real? It didn't, you know, I couldn't prove it one way or the other with this, but it seemed a very peculiar sort of thing for him to have done.
Andrew, is anybody talking about it at political level at all? Because I know some of our listeners are diligent lobbyists, and they really are. I'm thinking of two or three who listen to this program, and smart people who lobby politicians. And they do send politicians information that they gather. They might be reading things on your website, in research you've done, or other people. Are there any politicians saying anything about it, or do they not want to know about it, or what?
Well, again, I was contacted by somebody in Greece. There's a chap called Wayne Hall who's kind of got a bit more. I tend not to get involved in the political side of things, and I've written to my own MP in this country a few times, but there was a Greek minister who got involved with this issue and tried to get some information on it, and I believe he asked some questions in the European Parliament. Again, there's an article on my website that Wayne Hall wrote. I think if you just Google European Parliament chemtrails, it'll probably come up as the first link.
And that's on your own website, yeah.
Checktheevidence.com, yeah. Yeah, that's right. And you can go onto there. I mean, people are listening and they want to follow up and they miss anything, please, you know, go onto the contact button and send me an email through that, and I'll try and, you know, pass you the relevant links if you can't find them.
Well, you can always download this interview as an MP3 as well from our website and post it on your own if you want to do that.
Okay, right, thank you very much. And so there was that chap. I forget he was a Greek politician. I forget his name. If I could remember it, I'm not sure I could pronounce it. And then there was an MP in the UK called Norman Baker, who made a few noises. And he's Liberal Democrat MP.
Yes, I know Norman because he was very interested in the David Kelly thing as well.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah, that's Norman.
Right.
Yeah. Sorry, I shouldn't say thing. I should say the David Kelly. Well, we could say murder, couldn't we? But the David Kelly death.
Well,
yeah.
We know again. It's one of those things. Nobody seems to be able to prove anything. But there's some very, very strange things surrounding his death.
Yeah.
Have come out, and the paramedics reporting what they reported and everything. It's very, very suspicious, and, you know, it all stinks, really, to me. But
can I ask you one question, Andrew, before you go on? Because I know that I'm going to get some emails tomorrow, and the emails are going to be that men and women like yourself, even though you've come from an academic background, that you're the type of person who, when something is a little bit difficult to explain, you jump straight on, well, it's got to be a conspiracy. I know that's been said to you before. Mm. It's been said to me before. How do you answer people when they say that to you?
Well, it depends on the person and how, you know, what's the way that they say it, because sometimes there's really not a lot of point in responding because, you know, I've got sort of better things to do with my time, so to speak. But if they're genuinely interested in trying to understand why, I'll just say a simple thing. You look at the title of my website. It's all about studying evidence. And this whole, you know, scene of calling it a conspiracy theory or, you know, it's all to do with UFOs or something, that is really a social control mechanism to stop people looking at the evidence. You have to go and look at the evidence and convince yourself. And if you're not convinced by the evidence, well, that's your personal decision. That's your personal conclusion. I'm not out to convince anybody of anything. I essentially class myself as a kind of information service, you know, an information collection service. All I do is try and collect information, collect evidence, analyse it, which is what I've had to do with my programming background. You have to do a lot of analysis and a lot of processing of, you know, sort of complicated information. I've tried to apply those same skills to this stuff and then post it on my website, and that's basically what it is. So if people say you're a conspiracy theorist, Andrew, well, I say, well, you need to go and check the difference between evidence and theory and conclusion. And I try to look at the evidence, draw a conclusion, and then I'll give people my conclusion. If they disagree with it, that's up to them.
What I find interesting myself, and I mean, I've studied history and English, and I studied journalism, and I've really dealt most of my career in mainstream news, Andrew, covering politics, really, elections, covering county council meetings and all that boring stuff that you do as a junior reporter. But what I find interesting, and I really am, I'm not agnostic as such, I'm leaning towards the idea that there are certain things that are very wrong. I said to you on the phone today, I believe what we've heard about September 11 from the mainstream media is very questionable. While I don't necessarily make the leap to the conclusion that Mrs. Bush and Cheney and Wolfowitz all planned it, I don't necessarily make that leap, but I don't necessarily think that the official version is right. I'll tell you where I'm coming from. I look at things that we know now as historic fact, like the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which led to the escalation of the Vietnam War. Other things dreamed up by the Joint Chiefs over the years in America, things like Operation Northwood, let's shoot down an American plane over between Cuba and Florida and blame it on Cuba, and then we'll do the invasion. And what I find interesting is people know that at one time anyway, we can say for a fact that our governments, our leaders, thought about doing some pretty nasty things. And in the Gulf of Tonkin incident, they did do a nasty thing. Why wouldn't they think of doing some things today that are kind of beyond the pale if it was to further their own agenda? I don't understand why people can't imagine that today something might be wrong. I'm not saying it is wrong, but it might be wrong.
Well, I think, again, it's down to the sort of what comes out on the news broadcast.
Yeah.
I have this, you know, I've done a lot of research into this, and I've come to the conclusion that a lot of the information on the internet has been very tightly controlled.
Yeah.
And I've had to write a book about this because of the research that I've become involved with Dr. Judy Wood, and you know, she's done most of the best 9/11 research, but unfortunately the conclusions that you come to are very very different to what a lot of the other 9/11 truth websites will give you, and they take these, you know, these dastardly acts, as you might call them, to a whole new level. And really, again, it comes down to checking the evidence for yourself and not believing what the mainstream media will tell you. And I think the problem is, we've talked about this, is that if something traumatic happens, whatever it is, and then you give people an answer which roughly explains what's happened, once they've got an answer, they will tend to sort of package that, you know, or give it closure and not really think about it again. And 9/11 was such a horrible event, trauma for people.
Andrew, do you want to pause for a second while we take a very quick break? Are you okay to do that?
Absolutely.
And stay with us for another 10 minutes if you can. Sorry to cut you off mid-flow there, but got to pay some bills, as you understand. So Andrew's going to stay with us. Thanks for that, Andrew, for another few minutes while I take a very quick break. You're listening to The Tonight Show right here on Talk Radio Europe with Andrew Johnson. Andrew's website is called checktheevidence.com. He's graduated in computer science and physics, worked in software engineering and software development for a lot of the last 20 years, teaching and lecturing as well in adult education, working for the Open University. Interesting things to say, has Andrew. Let's have that break then. We'll be back with more talk. Don't go anywhere.
Richie Allen, Tonight.
And welcome back to the programme. The numbers are the same, as always, 952-799-224, or if that fails, 902-44-4461. And you can also email us at studio@talkradioeurope.com. Andrew Johnson is still with us. Thanks for staying with us, Andrew. I appreciate it. When chemtrails first came up on this program, I may very well have misunderstood what one or two of the listeners were saying, because I understood that they were saying that the chemicals were harmful and that they may be designed to maybe harm the population on the ground. And I was very sceptical, saying things like, well, why would anybody do that? Because you're also on the ground yourself. Your family, I'm not talking about governments and all of that, but it's becoming apparent that if this is for real, that it's not designed to harm anybody on the ground. Maybe, as we were saying earlier, that it's all about maybe protecting the planet.
Yeah, it's a very, again, it's another question on which there are no clear answers, to my knowledge. Certainly, if you look at the way that you see these grids on some days, and you don't, you know, in most areas you don't have to wait long to see them. When you look at the amount of trailing that goes on some days, not, you know, I've got videos and plenty of videos on the web where you can see this in time lapse format. I've taken time lapse videos and stuff like that. You would think that if there were toxic chemicals, it would be having a far greater effect.
Yeah.
Some people think it's kind of like a background drip feed, and there's not, you know, for example, some people would suggest that it's an immunosuppressive agent which is being put in the trails, therefore we won't actually sort of die, but we will just more likely become ill more easily. I'm still waiting for the evidence of this to be sort of borne out on a large scale. Now, there is an interesting film that people can watch called What in the World Are They Spraying? And this came out a few months ago, and it's been produced by a chap called G. Edward Griffin and Michael Murphy, two chaps have done it, and you can go and watch this online. It's a very interesting documentary, and they certainly seem to have documented one case of elevated levels of aluminium and I think possibly strontium in Mount Shasta area in California, which is, you know, Mount Shasta is a pristine area. There's no sort of industry around there, and they apparently somebody has taken snow samples from the mountain and found levels of aluminium sort of 10,000 times the higher than they should be. And there's a couple of other areas they sampled. And I've heard of this happening in isolated areas around the world with raised levels of aluminium and barium and this sort of thing. And there's various claims being made about this. What's in the film, The World They're Spraying, that's some of the most compelling evidence that I've seen so far that something really is coming out of the back of these aircraft. But then again, you know, on the counter side of that, I know, for example, that the way that an aircraft engine works, as I'm sure you know, it's a very finely tuned piece of engineering. And, you know, you can't really change what goes into it that much without it breaking down.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can't just sort of like get, aluminium foil and grind it up and put it into oil and then dump it in the fuel and then expect it to come out of the engines, without any impact on the aircraft performance. And you're not, you know, you're going to see residues building up and all this kind of thing. So, you know, this is where you start to get into the difficult areas. And some people say, well, obviously what they're doing is attaching separate nozzles and they're putting the chemicals in there. I've certainly seen a couple of interesting videos where spray seems to be appearing at way too low a height There's one that was filmed, I believe, in Cheshire in the UK, which is where a contrail appears in or a chemtrail appears within low cloud. It's not cirrus cloud.
Yeah.
I've also got a picture on my website where we appear to have this gouge in a lower cloud layer, which looks like it's come from an aircraft somehow. But again, I can't really explain.
No.
How that would have persisted. So,
Andrew, fair play to you for saying that. Hold on a sec, because we've got a caller on line two. Good evening, caller.
Good evening. I'm sorry, I've forgotten your name, but hello, Andrew.
It's
anyway.
Richie. Who am I speaking to?
Yeah, David.
David, how are you? Say good evening to Andrew.
Hello, Andrew. How are you doing, champ?
I'm okay.
I've missed part of your very interesting talk and your comments. I must say that most of them I do agree with, and this chemtrail idea, you know, came about from the usual conspiracy stuff following 9/11 and even before. And I've read a considerable amount about it, as you have. I'm also a pilot, and I'm an amateur meteorologist as well, having sailed and in ocean races as well. So, of course, meteorology is very interesting to me from both the ground level or sea level and certainly in the air itself, being a pilot. You know, this idea of chucking something into the air up there at 40,000 feet even, it is possible. Of course, it's feasible that you can do it by nozzles, as you just said. But it's very difficult to be able to determine exactly where these particles or whatever it is that you're putting in there, it can't be a gas, obviously, it must be particles, are going to land due to the vagaries of the jet streams and winds at that level. So, you know, if any of our governments, God preserve us from these wretched people, wanted to poison or otherwise the populace below, you know, it's very difficult to be able to chuck something up there at 40,000 feet and even hazard a wild, wild guess where it was going to land.
David, can I ask you a question? Thanks. It's great to hear from you, by the way, you being a pilot.
Yeah.
So does that maybe lend a little bit of credibility to that it's not a poisonous thing, but what they're doing is they're somehow trying to reverse or to deal with the effects of global warming, and they're not telling us they're doing it?
Well, they could do that, you know, and the first part of Andrew's conversation, which I heard probably about 15 minutes ago before I left the car and got back in again, you know, he was saying that, you know, contrails have got this strange thing that one time you can see them and they don't last more than a few minutes, or seconds, in fact, disappearing a very short distance behind the aircraft that are creating them. And other times they spread to create the virtual cloud across the sky. Well, that's true, they certainly do. But, of course, then again, this is due, I believe, to the air movements. The temperature of a jet engine is constant. It doesn't change. Outside temperatures do change, and they do vary dependent upon the atmospheric conditions at any given moment. And so that you may look at a plane flying across the sky, and you see that a very short amount of steam, if you like, a contrail, is being emitted behind the aircraft, and at other times a great deal distance. And if you watch them, they certainly do twist and turn and eventually disappear while you're watching. They're quite fascinating to watch them. Here in the south of Spain, where we're located, Andrew, you know, I know the planes, I know the times of the aircraft. Not like I'm not an Ian Allen train spotter, never was. But, you know, I mean, I know the routes of these aircraft. I know the navigational beacons that they're flying over. And when I see them, I just know that it's a particular aircraft on a particular route. And the contrails that they're creating, you know, either stay or disappear very quickly. But these are commercial aircraft on a commercial journey. And it stretches my imagination a great deal that if a government, you know, is actually pouring some kind of aluminium or whatever else particles into that aircraft, and they're paying Iberia or whoever it happens to be to chuck this stuff out as they travel. That's not possible. Sorry, Andrew. Absolutely not.
What do you think, Andrew?
Well, yeah, I, you know, I'm following a similar thought process in terms of how they're doing it. There are various obstacles, such as David has described. However, what I would say in response to that is I have also tried to actually determine air traffic movements more thoroughly, because I bought a device called an AirNav radar box, which they're about £400, and they basically pick up the ADS-B signals from the aircraft and decode them and then put them on your screen and give you something like an air traffic controller's display. And I've been trying to do some stats with this. I haven't been able to post this on my website yet, because I've got about several 100 megabytes of data to process before I can sort of put something sensible on it. But I actually tracked two EasyJet flights. I posted a little article about this on my website, and this 5th of March last year, I got two EasyJet flights. I got the flight numbers, I got the source and destination, and they were on within 1 hour of each other, right over my house. I photographed them, I videoed them, I identified the aircraft. One of the, and they're the same type of aircraft, I think the A319-111 aircraft, same height, virtually the same speed, both UK domestic flights. One was leaving a long trail, which I photographed, and the other one wasn't. So I wrote to EasyJet and I asked them what was the reason for the difference in these trails. You know, if there's an incident explanation, please can you tell me what it is? And they wouldn't give me a response. They said, we cannot answer your operational query. So I'm yet awaiting what the explanation for this is, because this was on the same day. There was no essential variation in the weather conditions that I could detect. The EasyJet with a short trail was accompanied by another jet which I couldn't identify, which had a long trail very close to it in the sky. So, you know, I've got a number of anomalies like this in the data sets, which I've gathered myself, and other people have sent me photographs, which I can't explain. You know, like I say, some people say they're spraying aluminium and barium. I can't quite convince myself that that's going on a large scale. And I think David made a very valid point that if it was for, you know, targeted at toxifying the population, then it's not a very good way of doing it.
No.
You don't know where it's going to land. So, you know, unless it's meant to be a systemic thing where they're building up a certain concentration, I don't know. But I'm not happy with the explanations that I've seen around the place. Nevertheless, yeah. I take what David
said. Andrew, thanks for that. David, do you want to make another very brief comment before I wrap it up?
Yes, I do. Very good, Andrew. Great. I'm really enjoying the conversation. Just very quickly, I mean, with these two aircraft from EasyJet that you mentioned, were they identical aircraft with identical engines flying at identical altitudes? I think that's probably unlikely to know that.
All I can say is that you can go and look at the article on the website to check the details. They were the same model of aircraft according to the data which came out of the scanner that I've got. They were within, I think, 500 feet of each other over the period of time that I tracked them. So, you know, whether they had the same engine fit to them, who knows? I mean, I don't know the age of the aircraft. I've got the registration number, so if there's a database where you can look up the engines and whether they have...
Andrew, let me jump in there. David, I've made a note of your number, if you don't mind, because I'd like to give you a call and maybe get you on the program in the future to talk about things aeronautical with our own Jeff Jones as well, who's worked in the industry for many years.
Just very quickly, the aircraft couldn't have been 500 feet apart in vertical separation, because the separation of the UK is going to be, if presumably going in opposite direction, is going to be 1,000 feet.
An hour apart, apparently.
These aircraft were an hour apart. There was an hour difference. One came over at about 4:20, and the other was about 5:30 or something.
Uh-huh.
I've got all the dates and times on the website, on the article, so you can go check it out.
Good.
If you want.
David, lovely to hear from you, by the way. Thanks for calling the program. Lovely to hear from you, David. Andrew, we're going to leave it there for the moment, okay? It's not to say we won't come back to it again. We will come back to it again. Because
sure.
I'd like to have you back on, and maybe with your colleague, with Dr. Judy Wood, I think you said her name is, who I'm not familiar with. Thanks for coming on tonight to talk about it, by the way. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you,
I will stay in touch with you. You've got my email address now. I know who you are. You know who I am. And I'll have you back on the program again within the next couple of weeks, if you're okay with that.
Great, yes.
Time is of the essence, unfortunately, on live radio, but there you are. But yeah, I think you've given me a pretty good understanding into what you're trying to do and the research you're at and where you're at with it. And yes, it'd be lovely to have you back on again, Andrew. And the website is checktheevidence.com if people want to check you out. No pun. How's that? Checktheevidence.com.
That's it.
Andrew, lovely to talk to you. Thanks for taking the time out to speak to us this evening.
Lovely, thanks very much.
Not at all. Great to hear from you. That's Andrew Johnson there. And as I said, Andrew's website is checktheevidence.com. He's a graduate in computer science and physics from Lancaster University. Spent many years teaching and tutoring, lecturing. Works for the Open University now. Is very interested in these issues, as I am as well. You're with Talk Radio Europe. Let's have that break, and we've got news very soon.